listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
If my manager assaults me again, I will be assaulting him. After I fuck the manager up, then I'm gonna short the register up. Let's go back to the gap. Look at my check, wasn't no scratch. So if I stole, wasn't my fault. Yeah, I stole, never got caught. They took me to the back and pad me, asking me about some khakis. Well, if some black people walk in, I bet they show off they token blackie. Oh, how now they love Kanye. Let's put them all in the front of the store. Saw them on break next to the no smoking sign with a blunt in the mall, taking my hit. Write my hits, write my rhymes, playing my mind. This fucking job can't help them, so I quit. Y'all welcome. Hey, welcome to the Blackout Tips podcast. Your host Rod and
Karen.
You know, of all the years I've listened to that song and sang along with it, I never realized that he was stealing. So I mean, they kind of had a reason to pat him down the back.
Hello.
For them khakis.
He said we're gonna short the register up.
Yeah, I kind of should have known that he was going to go off the deep end one day, because he was dead wrong in this song. I don't know why I was like, oh yeah, the struggle is real, but you were stealing from work too, dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that ain't nothing to do with color. You just happened to be black, and it was like, oh, let's get this nigga.
Right, he was like, this racism hold me back. I'm like, I don't know, you are stealing out the register. And
maybe that five-finger discount might be the problem.
Smuggling khakis. Anyway, hey, welcome to the Blackout Tips. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Search the Blackout Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews. We appreciate everybody takes the time out to do that. The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
and the unofficial sport
is bullet ball
and bullet ball extreme. And before we get into just the regular part of the show, there's a lot of news and stuff happening. I did want to introduce a concept to the show that maybe you guys know about it. Maybe you don't. I don't know. We'll find out. But you guys know how I have Impossible White Man movies. Impossible White Man movies, one of my favorite genre of movies. It's basically all the action movies where white men can do anything and they don't die. But it doesn't have to just be a white man. You know, I'm talking Passenger 57. I'm talking Die Hard, the entire franchise, Impossible White Man.
Salt,
an Impossible White Man movie starring a woman. Tomb Raider is also an Impossible White Man movie starring a woman. You know, all those over-the-top action things, you know, so that's one genre, right? The Impossible White Man movie. Then there's Impossible White Woman movies. These are movies where, because a white woman takes the time out of her life to just care so much
that
about
love.
An impossible situation, she ends up saving everybody. You might find these movies like The Blind Side. Dangerous Minds is another.
Yes, one of my all-time favorites in that genre.
Impossible white man, white woman movie.
Yes, Coolio. Living in the gangster paradise.
So you got those two genres of movie. And then people already know these other genres. I didn't come up with those. You know, like magical Negro movies and stuff like that. Well, I got a new one, guys, and I don't think anyone's ever coined this phrase before, and it came to me because I love these movies, but I never had a name for the genre of movie because nobody ever has gone out of their way to name them. But I love black executive fan fiction movies. Right now, a lot of y'all are like, what the fuck is black executive fan fiction movies? And I'm glad you asked, because I have some examples. So I think the basic element so far of black executive fan fiction movies, now I'm not talking necessarily rom-coms, I think that's a different type of black executive fan fiction of its own, the, you know, Best Man Holidays and all this type of stuff, but that's really more of a rom-com. White people make those movies all the time. This was more of a genre specific to blackness.
Yeah.
Okay. So you may have seen some black executive fan fiction movies, you just don't know it yet, right? I'll give you a few examples. One of them, The Perfect Guy. I saw it a few years ago. It's a great black executive fan fiction movie. You can tell a lot of times the black executive fan fiction because it stars the same black people that you never really get to see get movies, even though they should be A-list stars. They keep getting these movies.
Come on.
And in The Perfect Guy, there's Sanaa Lathan, Morris Chestnut, and Michael Ealy. staple of these movies. All these guys,
they be in all of them.
They love these movies, okay? And the way that these movies go is always somebody that has a very challenging but lucrative and fulfilling career. And it's kind of nebulous what the pay is. Like, we never, they never bring up how much money they make.
Right.
But you just know they got a lot of money. Like, the houses and stuff that they live in and all these are always, like, the houses that, like, are just huge mansions, right? Like, Bang Bros rents these houses for porn when they're not shooting these films.
Come on.
And it's always, like, you know, they got, and it's like, you know, that house is real expensive because it's always got a great view. And it's a lot of glass in the house.
All see through.
Yeah, just
no curtains.
You know, black people do not go have houses without curtains, but in these movies.
Come on, the blinds at least.
That's how far the neighbors are. They're just people without curtains. Black people don't even need curtains anymore. We're like, look at our house. Look at me jack off. I don't care. We're here having lavish sex. Right
in the kitchen on the island,
right with the windows wide the fuck open. Okay, we are
nobody for miles.
Like, we don't even lock our doors anymore. Mm-mm. And then the other thing, they that's one element. You gotta have a nebulous job, and like the job, you pick the job. The job is always something like works for an advertising agency. And I don't know if advertising agency people are like, this is the most like, how many people have gone into advertising and they just are not making this kind of money and they're like, this is some bullshit.
Right. They be like, that's like an entry level job, like 35, 40, 50,000 a year. What the fuck is this?
Right. Like, if I have to look up one more time and see Sanaa Lathan, making all the fucking, like making $12 million as an ad exec.
Come on!
Not even the boss or the owner of the company. Mm-mm, just corner office, ad exec. All the white people love her. They think she's doing a great job. But what they don't know is that she's also trying to have a baby. And the surrogate baby is, the woman who's carrying the surrogate baby is crazy. That was in the, I think the Bow Breaks or something like that was another movie like this. One of the best ways to find these movies, just put the actor's name in, like Morris Chestnut.
Oh, you will find him. I think he applies for them.
He's in several of them. Yeah, When the Bow Breaks, that was 2016. That was another great one. That was one where Morris Chestnut and his wife, both top flight African-American executives.
Top flight.
Okay.
Senior execs.
Senior execs.
That's another language they like to use.
Yep. They're both doing great things, you know, dealing with the, I don't know, Dorchester account or something. And, they can't have kids and they're trying to have kids so they can get a surrogate. To have a kid for him. And of course the surrogate goes crazy, tries to steal, the husband, mm-hmm. Tries to kill the wife. So that's the other element of black executive fan fiction we have to get to. There's always some crazy, dangerous element to what the fuck they're going through, right? It's just black people trying to have the American dream.
That's it.
That's it.
Slice of the American pie.
The American dream has been promised but never delivered to black people in America. That is all these black people are trying to pursue in every last one of these movies. They're moving out to the countryside, they're getting a big mansion, they're taking care of things and moving on up the corporate ladder. They're working twice as hard for half as much, but they're getting there and they're married and they're happy. And then just some crazy ex guy just decides, in the perfect guy, I'm going to kill one of y'all. I'm going to kill your current boyfriend and then I'm going to try to kill you because I'm crazy. And of course a black woman can't have dreams. What the hell are you thinking trying to have dreams? That was the perfect guy. In the Bow Breaks, I told you that plot. Breaking in. Now Karen doesn't see these with me.
Mm-mm.
I love these fucking movies. I had to see them by myself. I never find people to review.
I seen Breaking In. Ain't that the one that came out on Mother's Day?
That's the one you saw with me. That's Gabrielle Union.
Yes, I enjoyed that one.
Another black executive fan fiction movie. Breaking In was a mom and her kids and her husband moving out into an old house that they wanted to either sell or get rid of the old house that her father got killed because he was a really dirty criminal, and she's trying to like sell his house and get the hell out of there or something. And of course criminals decide that's the night they want to break into the house and steal everything from everyone and get whatever her father's hiding in the house. And then she has to, of course, save her children by herself because her man is just useless, gets knocked out like right away. And of course, you know, just black executive fan fiction. Not a horror movie. There's no supernatural elements. Not like Us.
No, it's not like Us.
Some of y'all are gonna try to throw other movies in this category. I'm telling you the parameters of the category. You can't fit in another genre. You can't be like, oh, this is a horror movie starring, you know, a supernatural being. No.
These are just regular ass people.
Right.
That works in accounts payable downtown.
It's black people. They don't work in accounts payable.
I'm sorry.
They work in.
They work in advertisement.
Right. They work in senior executive accounts of marketing,
big accounts, whatever the big account is, that's what they taking care of.
They are, every last one of these movies has like almost like 90% of these movies have at least one scene in the office to let you know how important they are. But they're like, god damn it, the Dorchester account needs to be taken care of tonight or I'm gonna be pissed. And it's like, oh man, Gabrielle Union's really having the time at work. She really needs this vacation this weekend. And of course that's when the killers show up, right?
Of course. Right when you need a vacation,
right?
Why not?
Another one that I just saw that fits into this category is The Intruder.
Yes.
Now I saw this one by myself, of course. Like I said, Karen won't see these with me. Mm-mm. I don't know why.
I could tell by the preview. I was like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know why you don't see it. I don't know why. Am I the only person that finds joy in this genre of movie? I know they don't make a lot of money.
No,
so.
The chat room love them too. They listen to a lot of shit. Somebody said, I think one of the all time classics and one of the first ones, maybe not the very first one, the first ones for me is Boomerang. That was like one of the first movies that came out where.
Well, see, that's a rom-com.
Oh.
That's a rom-com. That's about.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Because there was no killer.
Right. Nobody tried to, like, take his dream from him or impersonate his life or kill his wife. That's just a rom-com. Black people in a rom-com. Nah, it's just a specific genre. Like, Best Man Holiday doesn't count.
No.
You know, like,
okay,
none of that stuff counts.
I'm with you now.
Only the black executive fan fiction of, like, I thought I was straight and then shit just went way fucking left. Because the black people can't have dreams in America. Acrimony's a great one.
Okay. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah. The Intruder is good because it's a black family, black husband and wife moving out to the country to start a family. The house that you see in that trailer, if you guys have seen the trailer, and you're like, oh, man, that's a nice house. That house was $3.5 million, y'all.
They couldn't afford.
They could afford that house. In this movie, I watched it. They afforded that house, y'all. And keep in mind, and I want y'all to know, the negotiation tactics, the white man was like, $3.5 million, and then Michael E. was like, let's just get out of here. This is ridiculous. I can't do this. And I'm like, damn. And then he's like, I mean, you know they're going to get the house. He's like, $3.5 million is too much. And then the guy's like, okay, man, I let it go for $3.3 million. And then he's like, we'll let you know. And they got the house. And I was like, y'all niggas have $3.3 million?
Randomly sitting around.
$3.3 million. Y'all not famous or nothing. Y'all just two black people that just happen to be sitting on $3.3 million. That's just a thing that casually, y'all didn't even need to think about that number. Y'all didn't need to talk to anyone at the bank. Like, yo, $3.3 million? I don't know about this. This nigga's like an account executive and she was a social justice writer. Now, I'm not saying that writers don't make a lot of money, but I just have a hard time believing that with what Ebony owes people, that people gonna be able to show up with $3.3 million and be like, oh, okay. Shit, no problem.
Right, not no doctor, no lawyer, like none of them feels. Well, you be more understanding to them having that much money just sitting around.
It's like I said, it's my favorite genre, man. It's one of my favorites. I mean, Impossible White Man is definitely my favorite. Disaster movies are one of my favorites, but
yes,
I feel like there should be a shared universe of just black executive fan fiction. I hope all the movies happen in the same universe. Another great one. And for the record, when I say great, what I really mean is entertaining.
Yeah.
Don't get caught up, okay? Don't go watch these movies expecting
top flight.
Yeah, like you will see.
Oscar nominated.
Mm-hmm. Like a good black executive fan fiction movie will come in at about a 6 out of 10.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Now, I enjoy them all. I don't care if they're bad. But I'm just telling you, a good one, you're going to probably get about a 6 out of 10. Get a little loose with the plot details, a lot of actions that don't make sense. In The Intruder, I mean, Megan Good might as well have been a white woman, the way she was so just oblivious to everything. Like, no black woman acts like that out in the country town full of white people, because we're black people a little too suspicious. We're like, hey, what's this white man up to? But in this movie, oh, Megan Good was just like, oh yeah, come on over anytime, white man. You're supposed to move out of town last month, but you're cutting my grass for no fucking reason in the middle of the night. Hey man, you need something to drink? You know, like, she was just acting stupid, right? Her husband was like, keep this man away from my family, call the police if he show up. And then they cut to the next scene. He's like, hey, I had some wine, I was wondering if you wanted a glass. She's like, come on in. It's ridiculous. Another great one, that which I also mean by terrible, came out last year. It was called Traffic, with T-R-A-F-F-I-K, and it starred Paula Patton. Yeah, and she almost got sex trafficked, but she managed to not get sex trafficked. And it was all because she wanted to go on a romantic weekend at a mansion in the mountains, but a biker gang decided apparently to sex traffic two random tourists. As if, now that they was sex trafficking like other people from Russia and shit, they had targeted, but they just decided to go freestyle it and just get a regular woman that might have friends and family and shit. So we go through her harrowing ordeal, and she had to, you know, defend herself against this gang and shit, you know. And like Omar Epps is in the movie as her boyfriend or whatever. Like, and they get all, you know, get all fucked up, and then Paula Patton almost gets sex trafficked, but she figures a way out because she got to survive with her black executive skills, y'all. Okay, with her journalism skills, they helped her get out that cave.
Yes, they did.
Saved her life. Black executive fan fiction, y'all. I just want to put y'all on to something in case y'all not fucking with it. These are great movies, all right? These are some of my favorite movies. So I hope you guys, maybe let me know if you're into these, okay? I don't know if anybody else is into this. I feel like
they are.
I feel like as a genre, like, I feel like people have seen individual movies, but I'm watching all these shits. I didn't even realize I was watching all of them. I just started doing the math in my head when I was talking to Chris Lambert, and I was like, wait a minute, I saw Traffic, I saw Breaking In, I saw The Perfect Guy, or is The Perfect Man. I saw When the Bow Breaks. Like, am I a fucking black executive fan fiction, like, stan? I saw Acrimony. Like, I don't care about no plot. I just want to see black people with too much money get their whole life almost taken away from them, because American dreams are not promised to African Americans, dog.
Come on. We should be able to live those lives too without a care in the world.
Y'all need to get into this if y'all not already into it, because I'm just saying, this
just money for no reason.
And let me give you one more reason you should be into these movies. Guys, they are so short.
Yeah.
Like, what they lack in plot, they make up for in saving you time.
90 minutes at the longest.
I mean, if you have to pee during one of these movies, it's something wrong with your bladder. You should go to a doctor, because these movies are over like snap.
Yeah, hour 15 hour 20, they like, let's wrap this shit up.
I mean, I could pontificate on what I think about the genre in a deeper way. Of course, I have very deep thoughts about why these movies resonate with me and why they keep making these terrible movies, and why the movies don't make that much money, but they do make their money back typically.
That's why they keep making them.
Yeah, but you know, I want you to understand they're very entertaining. Now, on a deeper psychological level, I do think it, and I'm not joking, I know it sounds like I'm joking because these movies are so bad, but I'm serious. I really do think it's about the unattainability of the American dream for black people and the trauma that we have experienced historically throughout our time in America. I really do think that's what these movies are about. Like, the same way that I really low-key believe that all the movies that star, the horror movies that are about white people moving into a house and they don't realize that the house is haunted and terrible and it's coming to kill their kids, is about white guilt for white privilege. I think all those movies are about that, and how uncomfortable they feel in this world, knowing that there's a debt that they owe the world, but they have not paid it morally. and that is the, you know, the poltergeist coming out the TV on their ass. It's like, it's, oh my God, this overwhelming feeling of guilt and shame that I always constantly have. That's why I think, that's really what I think that shit's about. Like, all those movies, all those moving to a new house and some spooky shit start happening. And I know that, and I don't even like those movies. I don't even watch those movies. Me but either. I think that's what they're all about. I wonder why they kept coming out even more when Obama was in office. I'm like, these movies coming out a little too fast. What y'all trying to
it
say?
It was coming out like hotcakes then. You was like, well, goddamn, it's not even Halloween. Why are we getting this in the middle of the summer?
Like, they might as well move in the house, open up the door, and the first thing they say is, oh, so glad racism's over. And then the rest of the movie just is horror, right? But these movies are, like, on a subconscious level, I think they're about deeper things. I don't know that the producers and directors would say that. Mm-mm. And I don't know that the movies necessarily hold up to these high ideals that it place upon them. And maybe I'm just projecting. I mean, it happens. We all project. But I really do think there's a deeper meaning to these movies, and it's why I love them. It's because I'm like, yes, that's true. When you black in America, it's all terror. And these movies to me are much scarier than horror movies in a way, because all this shit can happen. You could date a crazy man that want to kill you and your man. That happens in the paper all the time.
Oh, every day, B.
You know, like, I'm not saying the way they happen in these movies they would have it, but these stories ain't that far-fetched. Like, in America, white people selling you a house and then scheming to get the house back and trying to kill you and take your wife and shit. Like, and I mean, it's kind of the story of America. It's called sharecropping. I don't know. Like, it's kind of, we have the historical relevance for that shit. So, I don't know, man. I think these movies are interesting from that perspective. But while you're in the theater, of course, it's never that deep. It's just, oh my God, Morris Chestnut really gonna let this nigga come in the house? Like, he can't tell that they babysitter is trying to fuck him. Like, right. Maybe, and then she just looked at his wife and crossed her throat with a knife. Like, y'all don't think, that'll make you uncomfortable more?
Right.
You know? Anyway, I love these movies. Alright, let's get into, the news, alright? Let's see, a bunch of stuff has happened. I guess the biggest news of social media today, I kept seeing, I couldn't really avoid. And so I actually wanted to watch it all to get the, full context is Aisha Curry went on the Red Talk
Facebook show.
Yeah, the Facebook show with the Jada Pinkett Smith, her daughter Willow, and then her mom, who I don't know her mom's name.
That show is extremely popular. I haven't seen that nary second of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I think it's a great show. I don't know the rules on social media. Can they be nominated for an Emmy?
Oh,
like a daytime
know.
Emmy or whatever.
Yeah, people say it's good.
I don't know how the ratings go and stuff, but I really like the show. But I think all things like this, it's kind of a litmus test for how people already feel about the people going on the show, you know.
Agreed.
All that type of stuff. I mean, I have a very insular circle, mostly black people, and of those people it's probably mostly women that I follow and talk to on social media. So, you know, I get a very, like, kind of certain type of view of all this stuff via my social media, but I don't know that that's the way it's being viewed everywhere.
Oh, they said it was the first Facebook show nominated for an Emmy.
Okay, yeah, it should be. I think it's really good. And every time I see a clip of it or I see a episode, I'm always like, oh yeah, I like those interviews. It's very good production styles. And they get really good guests. And they talk about kind of emotional things, and they get, you know, Jada Pinkett Smith is good at getting like tidbits out of people. And I think the way it's edited is a little bit like kind of harsh, because it's definitely edited for time, in a way that, you know, I get it. I mean, I know I'm a weirdo with the kind of like, hey man, if it takes an hour to explain it, then take an hour. But a lot of people are like, wrap this shit up. So, you know, Facebook is definitely one of those places where 27 minute video, people are like, oh no, you know. But I'm like, yes, yeah, only like about a half hour normally, and I enjoy them. No commercials or anything like that. Anyway, so I know we talked a little bit, like, when that girl that was fighting with the Kardashians, Jordan something.
Yeah, she was on there. Show.
Yeah. But on this one, it was the Curry family, and apparently they have like Aisha Curry. It was like the biggest episode they had as far as cat members that were being interviewed. It's like Aisha Curry, there was like Steph's mom, Dale Curry's wife,
okay,
Sadell Curry, which I think is like the little sister or something like that, or what, or something like that. There's a Doc Rivers' daughter who is married, who got engaged to Seth Curry.
Okay.
And then there was,
all women?
Yes, all women. Okay. It was all women this episode. It's not always all women.
Right.
But it was all women this episode. And then people kind of only took Aisha Curry's comments from the show and kind of, they were going viral through clips online. And so I wanted to like see it for myself because I think that, it's just difficult when you see clips online because people kind of go off on a tangent. It's kind of what happens now, and
right,
long, you know, like long form Twitter threads and people bringing up old tweets from 2011, 2013 to be like, but what about when she said this and all that type of stuff. And you know, it's kind of that thing I talk about, and I think we all succumb to it, but it's difficult to resist the urge to be judgmental when you're online, because we have like all the receipts all the time, and we don't see people the way that you see them in real life. Like in real life, she said something in 2013 about women needing to like wear clothes and shit. Or
I remember that,
right? Mm-hmm. And then she said something in 2011. I saw someone found a tweet from 2011, y'all, that showed her being like, I'm at Auto Bell, I'm just trying to get my car washed, I don't need nobody trying to holler at me or something like that. Okay, it'll come back up in a second.
Okay,
so yeah, the people up there were Sonya Curry, Sadell Curry Lee, Callie Rivers, who's engaged to Seth, and then Aisha Curry, and they're up there with Willow, Jada, and Adrian, who is Jada's mom.
Okay,
so the couple things that went viral were she talked about how Aisha.
Okay.
She talked about how, you know, she gets annoyed by women who basically try to get with her husband, which I think would be annoying.
Right.
I don't think that's necessarily a controversial thing to say.
Mm-mm.
Let me see if I can.
Oh, man. How do you deal with that?
Okay, so this is Jada. Of course, she's married to Will Smith. She know.
Right. How do y'all deal with all the ladies around y'all men? How do you deal with that? Stefan is like very nice by nature, and he's very talkative. He's just like you. He gets it from his mama. And so like everything's always like very, very friendly. And sometimes to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm a grown woman, so I'll just insert myself and be like, hello, how are you doing?
Right.
Like, I'm okay with it now, and I've obviously, you know, like, the devil is a liar, and there's always, like, the ladies will always be lurking.
Right.
Hoping for their moment and waiting. You need to be aware of that.
Right.
But for me, I honestly hate it.
You know, and I thought that was interesting because one person was like, when I shared this link that said that she kind of hates it or whatever, and they were like, this is a complete mischaracterization. She didn't say that. She didn't say that. She does hate that happens. I think she just kind of hates the idea of always having to fend for a man's attention from, you know, groupies and shit. And I think people don't see that couple as a couple that's been together since they were 15, like got together in high school, have three kids now, and his profile has risen so much bigger than anyone would have thought.
Agreed.
Like Steph Curry went from, I remember when he was in the Dale Curry tournament here, I remember playing basketball with this kid at the Y. Like, it wasn't no entourage around, no scouts were coming in to watch him play ball with us or nothing. It was just Steph, just the regular kid. You know, and then, you know, he went to Davidson, and his star kind of rose a bit at Davidson. It was like, wow, Steph's like blowing up. Good for him. You know, he's a good kid. He's humble. He's nice. Never had a bad word to say about him. Mm-hmm. Just, Like honestly, even on the basketball court, like not, he doesn't cheat, he doesn't yell or argue with people, never gets in fights. Him and his brother were pretty cool. And so to think of his star rising to mega superstar in the NBA MVP,
which nobody is prepared for. I don't know why people think people are just prepared for that.
Yeah, times changed on her and him in a way that neither one of them can perceive, I don't think. I mean, like, he's more famous than his father. There's no way he saw that coming.
Right.
You know, he's going even when he's going into high school and in college, he was only like 6 foot. Like, he grew to 6 feet. Like, it was like, oh, it's like, oh, Steph's 6'1" now? He's 6'2"? You know, but it wasn't like, oh, he's definitely going to the NBA. It was like, oh, he got a little taller. And then that motherfucker just started showing out, and it was like, oh, he's going to the NBA. And he got hurt right away in the NBA, so then you don't get, you know, his star doesn't take off right away. And then a couple years later, when he's just like killing people like you just never seen before, that's when all of a sudden you got to think, okay, it wasn't just like people vying for Seth's attention with marketing and stuff, but now you got to deal with these women that didn't necessarily have him on their radar,
right?
Who are now like, yo, I like, what do I do to get me some Seth Curry in my life? You know, and you know that it's probably manufactured from the fact that he makes a lot of money, he's on TV. It's not it's not like some genuine love, but like, I can understand how that would be like fucking annoying, and also
to his spouse, yes,
it would trigger some insecurities you have. You know, I remember when we covered her comments on the show, when she said that, stuff, and, how it was, I remember how when that happened, it was kind of like, to me anyway, I read it immediately as, oh, she's probably insecure about, the women coming for stuff.
Cause they probably just came out the blue.
Yeah, like,
right.
I just remember like when she said that stuff and like looking at a magazine and da da da, and girls had to dress like this, and I was like, that's not really about what she just said.
Mm-mm.
You know, like that's more about what, like something particular to Steph. That's not about fashion. I'm sorry, I said 2013 earlier, I meant 2015, so 4 years ago, not five, but still, she said that shit in 2015, and I, like I said, we talked about it in depth on the show. I was like, yeah, I don't think that she's really talking about anyone in particular as far as like,
she's making a sweeping women statement.
I think she's saying this because she is now quote unquote competing with another level of woman that is trying to get in her man's ear, and she's like, what the fuck is this shit, you know? And especially with her having the quote-unquote good girl church type of image that she's cultivated, and she markets that like that is her brand. I cook, I'm a businesswoman, but I'm also like, you know, she's also a cover girl, but she's not like, you know, she hasn't established her brand so separate from the idea of wife, mother, and, you know, a person that cares for the house and shit.
At least not yet, yes. Like, yeah. If she chooses to do that.
Right. Yeah, she said, everyone's into barely wearing clothes these days, huh? Not my style. I like to keep the good stuff covered up for the one who matters. And so, of course, people took a lot of offense. Like, she's slut-shaming and all this type of stuff, you know. And this is what you really think about other women's bodies and all that type of stuff. I'm not saying they're wrong necessarily. People were saying,
say hello.
Sorry. People were saying that she was, calling them hoes and shit like that. Although she never said that, but people felt that way.
Right. They were projecting, yes.
And what I find interesting is the response to her voicing her kind of insecurities, I think, was kind of a lot of people projecting their insecurities onto her.
Correct.
You know, she got back on Twitter later and said she was merely reading a fashion magazine and stating an opinion. She eventually wrote, regardless if you like my style of clothes or not, which I don't care, please do not tear women down, degrade them, not cool peeps. Because people used her comments, and I think as with everything on the internet, right, people use her comments to bash other women. A lot of men like, get you a Steph Curry, not these hoes that be out. And so you had a lot of that shit, and then it becomes she's the pick me queen, even though she didn't necessarily advocate for all that shit.
Nope,
it just didn't matter. And people to this day are still mad at those comments, you know, despite her, you know, going back and kind of cleaning it up or whatever. Cool. So that was one of the things she said about these women, right? I think that's gonna bother her forever, probably, as long as you're with Steph, and you got these three kids, right? The other comment she made was about attention, right? She was talking about like how she doesn't get male attention outside of her marriage, and it was the answer to a question that was actually about the fact that there are so many women like lusting after their men, that it's like, well, I don't have that, like, you know. And I think, to me, the way I read into it, I'm projecting on it, I felt like she was saying, because she hasn't established her brand separate enough from Steph, she doesn't really have a lane for people that just be like, oh, I love me some Aisha Curry, that's a fine woman, blah blah blah,
right?
Because, you know, unlike say Ciara and Russell Wilson, Ciara was Ciara before she was met Russell.
Yes.
You know, Jada is Jada with or without Will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then Dale Curry's wife's, like, defense, like, she, like, even when she was Dale Curry's wife, the whole thing was, look how fine this woman is, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Aisha never really seemed to get that or to even really covet that, you know? And, like I said, I'm projecting, but I feel like her, what she was really saying was not, I want men to lust after me. It felt more like she would like to be known as Aisha, just like Aisha Curry, not Aisha Steph's wife.
Right.
That's how it felt to me. You know, I can't speak for other people. But you know, same thing. Like I said, I could kind of understand where she was coming from on that. Especially when you think about the fact that she's married to this man who's getting all this fucking attention, right? And so maybe she gets kind of bothered by it or insecure by it or feels almost competitive or thrown to the side by it. So, you know, I can get how you would be like, yeah, you know, this is like you saying that, you know, you need this type of attention might, you know, I mean, you saying you need this type of attention might be about the fact that he's getting that type of attention. And to you, it's like, this is new to my relationship. It's bothering me.
And that's human. And people on social media do not allow for just human being real. Like, she's just saying it. And for the fact that she's saying it, people act like it's a motherfucking problem. Like, they're not, like, you and your regular normal ass relationship ain't insecure about something.
Yeah, she also talked about dealing with anxiety issues. When Riley was born, she said a woman like came up to them to try to get their picture, and they were getting in the car, and the woman was like, you knew you signed up for this, like, right? So I mean, it's just crazy interactions with people. And her complete quote is, something that really bothers me and honestly has given me a sense of a little bit of an insecurity is the fact that, yeah, there are all these women like throwing themselves at him, but me, like, the past 10 years, I don't have any of that. I have zero. This sounds weird, but like male attention. So then I begin to internalize and I'm like, is something wrong with me? And you know, they quickly were like, girl, nothing wrong with you, you fine, you know, you beautiful, don't do this. And Jada talked about how she went through that too when she was younger and blah blah blah. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, it feels like she expressed some insecurity and some honesty, and maybe because of her past comments, people just don't want to be here for it. Like, you could, like, she couldn't have changed at all in the last 4 years,
right?
Like,
no,
having three kids and you know, being seen as the mom slash, you know, she even had a comment earlier this year where she talked about in their marriage that she puts her and Steph's relationship first.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're not happy, you know, with each other, then how can she be a good mom? How can she, you know, like, she's like, I put us first over the kids because it's about, you know, like, our happiness matters, and then it projects out into the rest of the family that we have to take care of.
I understand that. That's reasonable.
Yeah. I just think, I guess the horse is out the barn with the people that don't like her. It's just not gonna, they're never gonna give her any benefit of the doubt.
Mm-mm.
So I don't know, it felt kind of like people took a lot of stuff out of context to kind of come in her throat. But I thought it was a pretty honest moment and a pretty dope interview, because Jada and them are always getting these like these big moments out of people. And I mean Aisha Curry's been interviewed 1,000 times, and that's the first time I've been like, that's a good ass fucking interview. So you know, we'll see, man. I don't know. Also, that fame shit is just weird, man. It fucks people up. I don't think people really understand.
No, they don't, especially people that think that in certain situations, like it's particularly with like your photos of your kids and your child, like some people just think you are just not supposed to have any privacy, because a lot of people think that everybody famous quote unquote acts for it. Not so.
Yeah,
not so. Sometimes you're just doing your talent or whatever it is, or sometimes you just like say be married or attached to the person, and as they rise, you rise too. You, this was not planned for.
Yeah, so
not always.
Yeah, man, like I said, y'all can check out, I suggest everybody go check out the video for themselves. It's 27 minutes. The parts I'm talking about are very short, you know, they're, you know, so I forget when they start, but they're just a couple of comments. I think y'all should check it out for yourselves, because I just, like I said, you see a conversation on social media and then you see the thing in context. It's just, to me, I was like, this ain't really, this was not what y'all were saying it was. Y'all were making it seem like she said some type of like super hypocritical thing. To me, all three of the comments combined have one theme in common, which is kind of like, I wish these bitches would leave my man alone. No matter how you try to spin it, it's attention from other women, the invasiveness of you know, these women, all the comments about clothes and shit like that, all of it seems to kind of be like, I'm just kind of fucking tired of, I thought I was getting with this man and this man was getting with me, and we were gonna have a certain projection on our lives and we'd be taken care of and everything, but it wouldn't be this.
Right, like this is a little crazy. The average person is never ever prepared for it. I don't know why people think that they're just prepared to be thrust into the spotlight.
Yeah, she even talked about like women coming up to Steph, and because Steph's so friendly, and he is friendly, she can, and women do this all the time, and that's why it was so funny to see people act like they couldn't relate. But I know almost every woman can relate, that at least that dates, you know, dating somebody where you can tell this person's energy is off and they really trying to like holler at your man, but your man may not even pick up on it.
No, they don't always. It's that might sound weird, but men don't always pick up on women's energy, and women know women. So you could be like, hey, I'm here, yes, can I help you? You need to back off,
right? And so she like says, you know, I'm a grown woman, I will insert myself and be like, hey, how you doing, what's going on over here, you know, basically to say like, I'm his wife, bitch, back the fuck up off. And she's like, she hates that he's kind of oblivious to it because he's so outgoing and friendly, that she's like not necessarily worried about this woman stealing her man, but she's more worried about the idea of like the disrespect, like I'm standing right here. And even Mama Curry talked about it, like, yes, I had to do that shit too, like people roll up on Dale and I have to be like, Dale, what you doing, like not her, you know. And I think that people tried to act like it was so fucking like, oh, this insecure crazy bitch. I'm like, this isn't even a rich and famous thing. Regular people have this happen. Like, you can be a regular person and be like, yeah, I just saw clearly some overbounds like stuff happening right here and you weren't picking up on it, you know. So yeah, I don't know, maybe it's just like once you insert certain names, I just think it's just hard to kind of see them as human, and she's one of those people, I think. So
right, so no matter what she says, it's gonna be a problem.
Mm-hmm. I also don't think she really wants men trying to come at her and holler at her, so mm-hmm. And I mean, it is a patriarchal thing. Most of the time men aren't doing that because she's with her husband and they see it, they know that in our society that would be viewed as disrespect to Steph, so that's the main reason they don't do
right,
it
right. But nobody cares about being disrespectful to her though, particularly the women.
Yeah, I mean,
like, people don't want to talk about that. Bitches know when they be disrespectful and they act like something wrong with you when you be like, hey bitch, get away.
Bitches do know, Karen, this is true. Bitches do know. But yeah, I was gonna say, because if you like the way people are now, there's not a subtle like niceness to the like, oh, you looking good today, Aisha, and just that, and just a, like a complimentary like kind of platonic like, hey girl, get them bae, you know, like there's like that's not really out there anymore, because these aren't your friends, these people don't know you, the people coming after Steph don't know him, and the shit I bet they say about him is probably super wild, and she probably sees that shit,
right? Particularly social media and online and in the comment sections, like that shit is real, like when you read that stuff it is real.
Yeah, and so even if you want to like even if people were trying to give her attention, it ain't gonna go like she think. It's they're gonna be leaving comments on her Instagram of where she baking cakes and like, I love to eat that ass and shit like that, because people don't, there's no like niceness to it, there's no just like, girl, you looking good, are you fine, I don't care what, no, you know, there's not that, there's just like this fucking like, sit on my face, I'll destroy you, like you don't, like nobody really wants that kind of fucking attention, you know, the things that people fucking say is so out of bounds now, like that's why I don't believe that that's what she really wants. I think she was kind of being like, I think in total what she really wants is these women to leave her man alone and so they can just go back to just killing with themselves, chilling with themselves, and that's it. So yeah, that's crazy. And yeah, I see Brianna says temptation is real, but so is choice and free will. Absolutely. I don't even know that she sounded like she thought he was cheating. I think she just feels disrespected by the whole process of these motherfuckers being like, I'ma just keep hollering at you like you, like your wife don't exist. Right. And men don't do that to her. So she's like, what the fuck is this shit?
Right, because when it comes to a marriage, women are always considered property. Right. So a man won't come to a woman if they feel like she's claimed, like the property has a name tag attached to it and somebody that is accountable and will fuck you up.
Right.
For messing with their property, okay? Now, when it's reversed, it's a different story. It's like, hey, this man is my property too, because people only think property is a man over a woman. But no, it's a woman over a man. That dick is mine. I see it. You see it. We all see it. Get away. And I have the right to defend my property. So I do have the right to insert myself. I do have the right to tell you to back up, bitch. I have the right to do that. Because women have a way that's very different. And some men do know what women are doing and choose to engage. But sometimes some men are oblivious, particularly if you're like a friendly, outgoing person. You might ignore the cues or you might not know what it is. And women know women. So yes, I have the right to protect my property. And I feel like a lot of women don't respect it, but men have a tendency to respect a man because, like I say, men's property is more valuable than women's property. So it's like one of those things where, as a woman, I know it has got to be hard from it just being you and your spouse to all of a sudden hundreds and thousands of women just pop up out of nowhere. Because, you know, women, that's a little different. You know, most women are constantly offered in some shape, way, or fashion dick, whether they want it or not. You know, but, you know, when it's reversed, people have a tendency to not respect that woman. Cause like I said, they don't respect her property. So when women insert themselves, they're considered disrespectful to the other woman. They're considered, being harsh. They're considered, not ladylike. But you know what? I don't have to be ladylike when it comes to my property. Just like when a man is protecting his property, he don't have to be man. Like, he can be like, hey, dog, you know what it is. Mm-hmm. And women can be like that, too. I think women have the right to be like that if they choose to be like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's just different things that work for different relationships.
Correct.
You know, but I can see, it's, I don't know, it's that thing where, I don't know how to explain it because it's kind of, it's conflicted. It's conflicting thoughts that I have at the same time, but it's this thing where, like, I don't want to be seen as somebody that's just always like advocating for celebrities and rich people and stuff. And I get that. Cause I'm definitely not one of them. So I definitely am not, but there's some weird type of thing that happens where people go, this person has money or fame and therefore they are no longer like supposed to have human emotions.
Right.
Or whatever emotions they do have, I'm going to take the opposite side and explain why that's fucked up. And that weirds me out, and maybe I err on the side of caution too much. It's possible, whatever. There's plenty of other shows where people are just shitting on celebrities and shitting on rich people, and I'm sure people feel much more comfortable with that. But to me, it's just kind of this, like, I don't know, I don't want to lose the sight of, like, these folks got humanity in them, because this, good or bad, this could be you too. Like, you hit the lucky lotto tomorrow and you, now you're thrust into a situation where you're like, I didn't realize these motherfuckers had different problems that to me sounded crazy when I was just a regular person,
right?
But now I understand how you get anxiety about people coming up to you and want to take your picture everywhere you mm-hmm. go, or somebody won't even let you breastfeed your child in private, or mm-hmm. You know, you with your husband and somebody just walks blatantly past you and starts flirting with him and trying to take selfies and shit,
right?
And you gotta like I can see how that shit would fuck with you, dog,
right? You know, like you said, y'all, you have a, particularly once you get to a certain status where you're kind of, anywhere you go, people will recognize you. People realize you can't go out to dinner, you can't go out to eat, you can't go grocery shopping. Like, you can't just do some of the regular, everyday, mundane things
right.
in the world without drawing attention. And most people don't really think about, I can walk out my house and do just function and be fine. They can't do that. And then a lot of times, particularly some of them, they were like, look, no, I have a bodyguard everywhere I go. Why? Because I want a peace. I want protection. I don't want randos walking up to me all the time, because a lot of people fail to realize, no, you're the 1,000th person today. You know, you think you're the only one. No, you're the 50th person in an hour, you know? And I know, being human beings, you do get tired. You do get exhausted. And everybody considers everybody else a human being but rich people, and I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, like I said, it's not that I mean, obviously I vote Democrat, but one of the things that does not really resonate with me in a Democratic Party is when they start going in on just, like, rich people are the problem, is rich people, that's always this, is rich people that, because I'm always like, some of them, sure, you know, absolutely, but some of this shit is everybody being part of the problem, not like, if you got rich, you just be like, it wouldn't make, like, you'd be you, but then people would be like, yeah, no matter who you are, you're still part of the problem as far as I'm concerned. You know, the thing where, like, a motherfucker like Jay-Z comes out of the projects and people treat him like he's been rich his whole fucking life, and it's just like, you know, ne'er-do-well ass, like, rich malcontent that hates black people all of a sudden, like there's something about that just feels off to me, like our analysis of it. So when you see, like, a politician be like, yeah, the problem is people making too much money are the whole problem, I'm like, some of them I understand, all of them, not all of them. And so I think you got to be clear when you're talking about that shit. If somebody, like, is an entertainer and that's what got them rich, if you're talking about, when people do, I'll give you a perfect example when I don't fuck with it. Every time you see a white guy talk about NBA players making too much money to play a game, mm-hmm. every fucking time I have the same goddamn response, which is, who the fuck are you? Because it sounds like that same impulse is inside of everybody, but that is something about you being like, I'm mad that these niggers got this money.
Right.
Like that's a different type of... So when I used to know white dudes that would try to couch that shit in, like, yeah, I don't like LeBron James, he's rich for playing a game. Like, LeBron came from the Akron Projects. The fuck? Like, who's, you don't have these problems with hockey players. You ain't never argued, like,
baseball, you know, players.
Yeah, you don't argue about that shit. Like, there's elements, there's levels to the game is what I'm saying. So I may feel a little more empathetic towards certain type of rich people, because I'm like, yeah, they got money, but that don't mean that they don't have same insecurities and shit. If you got paid tomorrow, you still have the same insecurities about certain shit.
Yes, you would.
You know? Like, some of this shit is deeper than just your fucking bank account number. All right. Well, this is a nebulous, messy episode. Let's keep it going.
Duh!
Let's keep talking about big concepts, grinding the show to a halt. That's what I like to do.
Halt it up.
Let's halt this bitch. Men have no friends and women bear the burden. It's in Harper's Bazaar. By Melanie Hamlet. Kylie Ann Kelly. Oh, must be a white woman. I mean, come on, that name. Can't remember the exact moment she became her boyfriend's one and only. His "What Would I Do Without You?" But she does remember neglecting her own needs to the point of hospitalization. I talked him through his aspirations, validated his opinion, supported his career. I had to be his emotional guru because he was too afraid to admit he had any emotions at all. Recalls a 24-year-old English teacher who was studying for a PhD at the time. Kelly's boyfriend refused to talk to other men or therapists about his feelings, so he'd often get into funks, picking pointless fights when something was bothering him. Eventually, Kelly became his default therapist, soothing his anxiety as he fretted over work or family problems. After 3 years together, when exhaustion and anxiety had landed her in the hospital and her boyfriend claimed he was too busy to visit, they broke up. Now that's an extreme example. Kelly's story, though extreme, is a common example of modern American relationships. Women continue to bear the burden of men's emotional lives, and why wouldn't they? For generations, men have been taught to reject traits like gentleness and sensitivity, leaving them without the tools to deal with internalized anger and frustration. Meanwhile, the female savior trope continues to be romanticized on the silver screen, thanks Disney, making it seem totally normal, even ideal, to find a man within the beast. Unlike women who are encouraged to foster deep platonic intimacy from a young age, American men, with their puffed up chest, fist bumps, and awkward side hugs, grow up believing they should not only behave like stoic robots in front of other men, but that women are the only people that they are allowed to turn to for emotional support, if anyone at all. And as modern relationships continue to put pressure on the one to be the only one, where men cast their wives and girlfriends to play best friend, lover, care, advisor, stylist, social secretary, emotional cheerleader, mom, to him, their future kids, or, and eventually on-call therapist minus $200 an hour fee, this form of emotional gold digging is not only detrimental to men, it's exhausting an entire generation of women. What you think so far, Karen? Guys, I saw you pull your notepad out. You just don't.
Oh, I didn't know how long you were going to read.
I mean, it's long, so you can chime in whenever you feel like it.
Oh, yes. To an extent, I agree. No, not all men, but there are a large percentage of men. And you know what does this? Patriarchy. Everybody, that's the root of all of this that nobody ever wants to talk about. How particularly straight men, how they are taught. Don't cry, boy. What you crying for, boy? You're soft. You know, I'm just, you know, from my experience, you know.
No, you're right.
You know, when little boys show emotions, when they, you know, want to explain themselves, when they get frustrated, what do they do? You know, because children are human. You know, it's okay for little boys to fight and punch stuff when they get mad and angry. Instead of looking at that little boy and say, look, use your words. What's wrong with you? Explain yourself. You know, that they're not forced to do that at a very, very young age. And I think that society has showed men a very toxic and a very deadly and a very dangerous definition of what men are. And men have bought into it, and because society tells them that. And so it's hard to break these bad habits of lack of communications, lack of emotions, lack of feelings. You don't want to talk. Men have a tendency to shut down when they're dealing with things. You don't want to express yourself. You know, you're balled up with this anger. You're balled up with this sadness. You're balled up with this fear. It's particularly when it's something that, because society teaches men, if something happens, I'm the quote unquote man, so I'm supposed to always have the answers. So when I don't have the answers, it becomes a problem because I don't know how to handle not having an answer to it. And Lord knows the last thing I want to do is go to my woman and be like, look, I don't have the answer, baby. Can we work this out? You know, because society has taught, particularly it's a religious thing too, men are the head of the household. That's a lot of weight for one person to bear. It is a lot of weight for a human being to bear. And nobody really wants to talk about the things that men go through. You know, men aren't taught to have boys night out unless we're getting fucking smashed drunk. You're not taught just to, hey, dog, I ain't seen you in a while. Men do get like that. Some do, but it's when they're older. It's when they're much, much older and they've experienced life. I'm talking about like younger men. You're not taught to go out with your boys and be and talk about the relationships and dealing with women and whatever you're going through and sadness and depression. Like that shit affects men too, just like it affects women. But you're taught to shut it down. You know, you're taught to not have emotions. You'll be all right. You'll get over it. You know what men do when men break up with men? Instead of talking about his emotional pain of his relationship that he just broke up with, what do? Have a beer. Go get smashed. Come on, dog. Let's go get high. You'll get over that, bitch. You don't really talk about the shit. Those things don't make those emotions go away. These are things that have to be talked about. You know, men get their heart broken at a very young age, and they don't, a lot of them don't know how to and aren't taught how to deal with the emotions of their first love. A lot of times people put that on women, but men have first loves too. And a lot of times when they have these first love, if they are not taught how to deal with love and what love is and the definition of love at a very early age, their definition of love is stagnated, you know. And I think also their definition of love actually reflect on how they treat women. That's how you have these grown ass women. All women are bitches. All women are hoes. No woman is faithful, you know, and all this shit, because they haven't went through the emotional thing that a lot of times women are required to do. Women are required to talk. We're required to express ourselves. We're, you know, required to use our words. You know, I'm having a tough time. What do I do? Come on, girl. Let's get some wine. Let's talk it out. You know, let's get through this thing together, girl. I'm here. I'm your emotional support. Yeah, I've seen men do that, but I've seen men do that as they've gotten older. Call and check on your boys. But a lot of times I see that as men get older. And I think it's a disservice to men as a whole. And a lot of times these men affect everybody else around them. They affect their women, they affect their children, they affect their partners, they affect their mates, and everybody attached to them due to this toxic masculinity that is placed in them at a very early age. And then, you know, men do actually, I've seen men go to therapists and psychologists. A lot of them were rejected because going to that is soft, weak. Why I'm a pay to go talk to somebody? But my thing is, it's okay to not be perfect, and it's okay to show weakness, you know, because that's the thing. Men aren't taught to show weakness. You know, if I show weakness, that mean I'm less than a man. Not true, but men have bought into that because that's what society have taught them. And women have bought into that, so they actually push these things upon their men. I don't want no soft men. I don't want no weak men. I don't want a man crying. I don't want a man, because they have actually bought into that, which actually emphasizes more on the fact that some men don't even go to their women because their women have bought into this too. And going back to the situation where you're talking about the man and the woman, a lot of men do treat their women like that because for the first time, this person is the closest thing to them, and they're having these feelings and emotions that they've never dealt with, and they've never rectified, and they've never got over, be it issues with their mother, be it issues with their father, be it they've been abused, be it whatever. These issues are unresolved, and a lot of times you put a lot of the responsibility on your mate, particularly in a straight relationship, on your woman to fix shit that's not her responsibility, nor is her obligation to fix it unless she chooses to. And then a lot of times men get mad, particularly when women get older, and they'll be like, nigga, I done been through this. I am not your your emotional mule. No, fix yourself and then come back to me. It is not my responsibility to fix your childhood drama. They act like we're obligated to help you get through this emotional shit in your life when we're not. If I choose to, allow me to choose to. Don't dump it on me and require me to deal with these things with you when you need to go to a psychologist. You need to go to a psychiatrist. You might, you know, have depression. You might have schizophrenia or whatever it is. I can't diagnose you. That's not my job, nor is it my responsibility. I can be there with you. I can help you get through this, but we can get through it together. But the thing is, if the man is not willing to take the steps to even acknowledge that there's a problem, that's the thing. You have to acknowledge there's a problem in order to fix it. Too many men will not acknowledge that. Yes, dog, I am depressed. Yes, dog, I do have anger issues. Yes, I've been off. Something's wrong with me. And get through those emotional barriers with your mate, because your mate will help you get through that, but she can't be the brunt of everything. It has to be a network of people to help you get whole.
And I mean, putting that all on one person is so much of an emotional burden for that one person. And you know, it's that thing where, because we advertise relationships and love as this fix all, this cure all, and especially romantic love, it's like, oh, this person knows everything about you. They know the perfect thing to say. They know what to do. They know how to fix what's wrong with you. And that's such a bad model to like sell people, because none of us are that. None of us know how. The people do not come with instruction books. None of us know how to fix each other all the time, and to put that kind of pressure on somebody is ridiculous. The other thing too, I think men make some pretty men can make bad friends, and I don't mean that to demean all men, blah blah blah, but I mean some of the traits that we possess, and some of the things we're encouraged with and told to do from the time we're born, they're not really good. Like, they're not real loyalty, you know. Like, I had friends that I would be like, okay, this dude seemed pretty cool, and they would be like cheating on their wife, or just that's just the way they got down. Like, they consider being a good friend me if I were to give them an alibi for them cheating on their wife, if I were to lie about where they were or something like that. And I was like, I mean every time I tap out, like, I'm not that kind of friend, you know. So yeah, there's that kind of stuff. When you talk about loners, right, you know who else are considered loners? These motherfuckers that shoot up places.
Right.
We talk about emotional repression. A lot of men hold their anger in until it lashes out at someone or something.
Come on.
You know.
Somebody whipping up on everybody or shooting everybody.
Right. A lot of men have a consistent, like, smoldering fire inside of them because they're not. This is the thing. Everyone has emotions.
Right.
You're just choosing not to express them until they become so toxic and fucked up that there's no healthy way to express them. And that's what's happening with a lot of these dudes. And so you get a woman and then you go, finally, my oasis, the one place I can express, I can cry, I can be sad, I can be upset, I can tell you how frustrated I am with things. But then you putting that all into one person, a lifetime's worth of shit into one person all the time. You don't have an outlet, you don't have other friends, you, like, it's a lot, you know. The idea of an emotional gold digger was first touched on in 2016 by writer Aaron Rodgers with a tweet that and it's Aaron, E-R-I-N, with a tweet that continues to be reposted on social media, both by women who marry self-described feminist men and by those with more conservative husbands. It has gained more traction recently as women, feeling increasingly burdened by unpaid emotional labor, have wised up to the toll of toxic masculinity, which keeps men isolated and incapable of leaning on each other. Across the spectrum, women seem to be complaining about the same thing. While they read countless self-help books, listen to podcasts, seek out career advisors, turn to female friends for advice and support, or spend a small fortune on therapists to deal with old wounds and current problems, the men in their lives simply rely on them. Yeah, that's the other thing too. When you're a man, you're just not taught that you're fucked up. It's why men get so, like, out of fucking control when you say, like, toxic masculinity, fragile masculinity. Men have never really been critiqued in this way until now, that people have a voice to be like, you can't avoid the fact that I feel like you're fucked up, and it's because you were, like, made to be fucked up and you need to work on it, you know. So now you have these men, like, very upset by it. But women get that from the time they're little girls,
right?
Every fucking thing they do is wrong. You're too sexual, you're not sexual enough, you never get a man, you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're tomboyish, you close your legs, you're being fast. Like, women, women are already kind of molded into looking for advice, even when there's nothing wrong with the women.
Right.
That's why, you know, you meet a woman and you're like, man, in your mind, like, this woman got it all going on. And you just talk to her for a little bit and you're like, oh man, like, life has fucked her over. Like life has fucked her up. She don't even see herself as the way I see her, as this, like, complete figure of like this person that has it put together. She can't even see that when she looks in the mirror, because everything has been like, you're to this, your hair's that, your face is that, your makeup is this, you're not wearing makeup and that's a problem, you got a man, you don't got a man, what are your kids like everything is a challenge.
Everything, dog,
put in front of women. And then for men, we're just kind of told, like, you're fine the way you are, and if nobody wants you, that's their problem. Right? You're good, you're handsome, you're this, you're that. Like, it's no real thing that you have to work on until, you know, women really got more of a voice on social media. So now we're starting to really hear how a lot of women have been feeling forever, but men aren't really privy to those conversations all the time, or they just don't care. And now you're seeing women be like, I was listening to a conversation on Tea with Queen and Jay today on their podcast, and they had this segment where they talked about dating apps, and it was so funny because they were talking about men taking pictures on dating apps and how terrible the pictures normally are. You know, as much as men complain about women's pictures, right? You know, she cropped this, she did that, but women like will do makeup, lighting, hair,
mm-hmm.
poses,
know the right angles,
take multiple pictures. Like when I get a friend request from a dude on Facebook, so often that picture is like just a fucked up ashy close up that where you like, is this a serial killer? What is wrong with your picture, sir? Like, you look awful.
No effort.
Like, is there something going on? Like, why are you staring down at the camera like you're gonna murder it?
Come on, kill like, everybody.
Like, am I supposed to feel like a steak?
Where is your shirt, sir?
Right, like, but men, it's just different for men. Like, men are just not judged as harshly for the same shit. It's a running joke, but how many times have we seen on social media, like, some dude being like, man, Aisha Curry would be fine if she'd lose about 25 pounds. And then you cut to a picture of this dude and he look like Carl Winslow without a beard or whatever, you know, like he's just like dog, what are you doing? Like, one of your eyes is swollen than the other. You don't get to tell. You don't get to be like, Rihanna need to put on 10 pounds. Rihanna would not step over you if you fell down. She would be like, ugh, I'm repulsed. And yet here you are feeling like you can just judge away, right? We are just entitled that way. And then when you throw that into a relationship, now another person in these cishet relationships, at least, has to deal with all that fucking entitlement we got. You know, and I see why women would be like, yeah, I'm fed up. It's for this reason that artist Lindsay Johnson jokingly calls herself everyone's beck and call girl. Not only does she take care of her husband and children, she just moved in with her mom to take care of her as well because she knows her brothers won't. But both recently divorced, her brothers are already turning to her, but never to each other, to provide support their wives used to. Men drain the emotional life out of women, says a 41-year-old who lives in Nashville, Tennessee. I love them, but good Lord, they become the bane of my existence. Johnson admits she enables her brothers by saying yes all the time, partly out of guilt, but also partly because she loves being needed to feel important. It's a catch-22. Eventually it becomes too much and I end up exhausted and resentful.
Yeah, sometimes women can be part of the problem. Sometimes you'd be like, no, I'm not doing that, not today. And I think that because women are taught to sacrifice, put everything before you, and men are taught put nothing before you. Are the head, nothing else goes before you. Like, family, fuck it, work 80 hours a week, fuck that wife at home with your kids sacrificing and being at home, you know, who cares about missing birthdays and holidays, you know? And you get men to get cheered for that. Mm-hmm. Fuck around and have a heart attack because they're working themselves to death. You let a woman do that, you ungrateful whore, how dare you work, and what about your kids, you know, shit like right. That well, you like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, like, nobody, like, at the same time that people were in Sierra's mentions about her dating Russell Wilson, I never saw anyone ask Future about his kids when he was out here fucking groupies, getting other women pregnant, dating Larsa Pippen, a married woman. Like, nobody was like, but when is he gonna raise his kids? Like, people do that with Amber Rose, they don't do that with Wiz Khalifa. And they're just happy with that double standard. But then they wonder, they get mad when someone says, well, this is what's wrong with masculinity. This is why it's toxic. This is why y'all aren't complete human beings. And the problem is, if you're a man listening to this, you gotta stop taking offense to this shit. Because to me, the thing is, people are trying to help you. Everybody who's talking about this shit is trying to help you become a complete 360 degree human being. Like, a person that's not going to the movies and scared they're gonna cry because, you know, that don't mean they're less of a man. Like, and that's hard for niggas to get through because our whole life have been told the opposite. You know, and so it's like, you're trying to learn to swim almost, and the second your feet don't touch the ground, we fucking tap out. Like, no, And especially as a black man, I know that feeling of, I'm not supposed to be allowed to be here and be a full person. If I'm not too hard, if I'm too soft, the world's gonna just fucking destroy me. If I'm too, you know, if I'm too open, too honest, too emotional, too fragile, too whatever, the world's gonna come get me. And then I'm like, racism's gonna just pop out of nowhere and throw my ass in prison. So I have to be on point at all times.
Right.
You know, and so I feel that pressure, but it's just something I'm trying to learn to let go. You know, I'm not saying I don't have any of it. I still have some of it left in me. Like I said, when I went to the dentist, I was in there like, I ain't gonna be no bitch. I ain't gonna let her see this shit hurts. But I could have just as easily been like, ma'am, what the fuck are you doing to my tooth? This not supposed to feel like this. Right? So that's still in me. I still got it, but I'm trying to let it go. Cause I don't know. Like I said, I still remember the day that I decided that shit was, watching the closing arguments to Trayvon Martin's trial and listening to the prosecutor make the defense of like, yo, this kid's life mattered, it was lost, and he's never gonna get to grow up and be a full person. And I remember listening to that white man and I cried and I was like, oh man, like I've had that feeling inside me the whole time. I never cried about Trayvon Martin's case until that moment. Like, not through the entire ordeal, not through any news coverage, not through any articles, not through any videos, none of that shit, because I just was like, yeah, shit happens, it's fucked up, you're not supposed to let this get to you. Like, you know, like they win almost if you get to you. But I was like, this kid is dead, he'll never make it to my age, and I don't want to die feeling like I don't express a full range of emotions, because I always experience it,
right?
But I don't want to die not having worked on that. I don't want to die being like I never really lived, you know, because a lot of times you're not letting yourself live. And then to turn around and get in a relationship and put all of this on the footstep of one person is extremely unfair. It's like, you're not marrying to a maid or a therapist. Like, you have to put something up in your house. You know, if it's reciprocal, I can understand even.
Right, if it's reciprocal.
You know, like me and you spend a ton of time together.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'd like to think that it's reciprocated. It's not one way of just me coming in, oh my God, life is so hard. And then you're like, oh, this thing happened to me. Well, fuck you, damn. I mean, I was talking. You know what I mean? Like, I would like to think that, like, why would you put that on a person, you know? I don't think I'm beyond it or anything. I think it happened easily. Cause you just don't, you're used to the world centering you.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I also have a lot of outlets of other people, you know, so, but I've always kind of been that way where I always had, like, cause I only have like kind of medium to close relationships. I don't do a lot of like how's the weather relationships. So like I,
because of how you function. Yeah.
Yeah. So like I've always kind of had people that I could be like, yo, this thing is happening in my life and it's fucking with me, and we will talk about it. And I don't seek them out to specifically talk about it. Like, I'm not that kind of person. I'm like, I need to talk to someone, but like, we'll just be talking about regular shit. And I'm like, yeah, I'm actually trying to talk about something a little more serious. What you think about blank? You know, I prefer those relationships, but it also, you know, while not trying to keep any secrets, obviously, but it also means that there's sometimes I forget to tell Karen shit because I'm like, oh, I already told somebody and I'm good. Okay. And I had to be like, oh yeah, I didn't tell you, so-and-so did blank. Like, what? I'm like, yes, you know, it was 3 days ago, forgot to tell you, but this thing happened, you know, but that's kind of good though, because this is not like becoming an immediate thing for you to fix or
right
to contribute to. Let's see, like John said, most of the women I spoke to for this piece believe that their ego and self-worth is often wrapped up in being a man's crutch. But the older women get, the less willing they seem to be a man's everything.
Right, and I was excited. That's why a lot of men, they like, I'm not trying to be funny. Have you ever seen like a lot of men as they get older, they like, I want the younger women? Because not trying funny, they're young and naive and they don't know better. A lot of times they don't know their worth. They are taught to, my job is to entertain you, my job is to worship you, my job is to put you first. They don't want a woman that's just been through some shit, they done dealt with various types of men, and they be like, my expectations are high, I refuse to lower my expectations for you. And men get mad at women for having high expectations, but those high expectations aren't high for no reason. you know, just like men have expectations, ridiculous. No, most people do, but men will say stupid stuff like, I want my woman to be under 200 pounds,
right?
5'4", you know.
Right. Or she better weigh the same weight. When we got married, you better weigh that same weight your whole life, even after kids, da da da. And men be saying this shit real, like, cocky and happy to say it. And nigga, you work at Whole Foods. Like, you not rich. You know what I mean? Like, you, what, like, what you doing, bro? You not, like, not that being rich would justify this, but like, nigga, ain't nobody doing this to put up with $35,000 a year. Like,
come on!
You, like, and your ass ain't about to stick to that regimen either. So what is up with this type of ridiculousness? But it's a common thing, especially down here in the South. It's a common thing to hear men say that.
Right, and it's fucking ridiculous. You know, and a lot of times when people say that, a lot of them never been married, honestly. Like, you be like, oh, nigga, you never been married. Get the fuck out of here.
Right.
And I don't hate to be like that, but if you've never been married, you have these ridiculous expectations. You do not know what it's like unless you actually experience being with a person like that.
The worst is when they are married and you got to look at their wife and her face is looking like, I love them. And it's just like, damn, sis, you gotta put up with this for your whole life.
Right. You expect her to look like a Rihanna. You over here looking like Stay Puft, the Marshmallow Man, but you got these fucking expectations. What, don't you think she wanna look at something attractive too? Like, you can't have these high expectations for her, but yet don't want her to have no expectations for you.
Yeah, it's just crazy, man. Like, but I've met people that feel that way. But as far as the friend, I know we're all over the place, but as far as the friendship thing though, I think that is interesting. You know, I think when people get married, a lot of times they drop off with friends anyway.
Right.
Cause you know, single people do single shit, and a lot of times married
people always hang.
Married people ain't got no business doing that shit still. Like, some of that shit ain't exactly, you know, the same moral code as what you have agreed to with your marriage. Men don't usually put the effort into maintaining friendships once they're married. The guys at work are the only people other than me that my husband even talks to. So when some of these men retire, they expect their wives to be the source of entertainment and even get jealous when they have a life. Johnson jokes that women her mom's age seem to be waiting for their husbands to die so they can finally start their life. I'll get a call saying so-and-so kicked the bucket, and sure enough, his widow's on a cruise around the world a week later with her girlfriend.
That's sad. But a lot of women are like, because women outlive men, so they be like, well, statistically, you'll die before I will, and when you do, I'm gonna go live my best life.
Right. So I think it just depends on that stuff. This TPS said, who are the single people that y'all know? This comes up all the time. All the single adults do is go to brunch and movies, at least women. Yeah, I was gonna say, I'm thinking about men, and they don't just do just that. Like, niggas get up to some, you got, like, there's a curfew for you when you married. It's like, y'all niggas ought to get up to no good. All right, well, it's 10. Go ahead and roast me.
And I'm old. I will holler at y'all later. Like,
even before I was old, we've been married since I was 21. And I've been coming home early since I was 21. Like, fuck that. Like, niggas get into some shit that's just like,
y'all getting too crunk for me.
Yeah, like I and that's the thing. Sometimes you look at that married dude, just like, I'm gonna go ahead and hang. You like, all right, then, player,
have a good time. I'm out.
Good luck with that. You know, it just depends on, and it also depends on when you get married, what you were into before. I'm not saying people need to completely change. I'm sure,
right?
If you were staying out, you met her in the club because y'all stay out till 3 a.m. every night or whatever the fuck, and that's what y'all gonna do when y'all married, that's cool. But I'm just saying, there's this certain shit that y'all know you don't need to be taking your ass over there to do, that you know that your wife would not be approving of. But men, a lot of dudes will be like, fuck that shit, you know. I'm sure there's some women like that as well, but I just know, I can only speak on the man half of it, because I don't really like, I've never really been in a situation where I kicked it as with a group of women, like on a regular, but I have been in a situation where I kicked it with groups of men. And yeah, you could just be like, yeah, your married ass need to go home with me, but if you gonna stay out, go ahead, player, you know, do your thing.
Have a ball. And the thing is, you know, every now and then I hang out late, but a lot of times if I hang out late, I'm in a safe environment, like, you know, where I know everything's gonna be all right, you know, versus if you're out in certain areas, you'd be like, nah, I don't want to.
Yeah, if you got real friends and they care about you and your happiness and your emotional well-being, they should look out for you and be like, dog.
They'll tell you to go home. They'll be like, ain't it time for you to get to your mate? You be like, all right, you know what? All right, holler at you later.
Looking at my clock, it's whole 30, and that's past your curfew. Bye.
Yeah, right. It's time to hoe. All right. Like, well, y'all go, y'all ho on. I'm out.
Right. Men are taught that feelings are a female thing, muses Johnson, whose husband often complains about her wanting to talk deep. Yeah, man, it's this archetype of masculinity that a lot of men are trying, like this John Wayne masculinity. Oh, y'all always trying to talk about emotions. Nigga, we supposed to be together and have kids, houses, to get all this shit for the rest of our fucking life. You think you're gonna go through the rest of your life never talking about no emotional shit? You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of times why when a tragedy happens to a couple, that's why they like split up, is because if half of y'all is like, I'm not even fucking talking about this shit,
not discussing it,
you can't get past it. You know, people talk about it all the time. You lose a child or something and the fucking couple breaks up. You know, this tragedy happens. It's like, ah, no. And at the same time, there's a lot of couples, I think, make it because they have a tragedy, and that's the first time a dude is like, I'm fucked up and I need to talk about it.
I can't handle this, right?
You know, I remember when I interviewed the sex therapist on my Medium talk, and she talked about how infidelity in a lot of cases was the thing that saved people's marriages. Not saying it's good or, right. Or but it's like, she's not recommending anybody be unfaithful, but she was like, a lot of times that's when people actually have to admit they have problems. So then you have to go to therapy and y'all have to talk to each other. So now you're finally having talks about feelings and shit. Maybe a dude before that was like, I don't do feelings. Right? So now that I'm about to lose everything, my house, my wife, my marriage, my children. Okay, well now I do want to tell you this is what happened and this is why I messed up. So yeah, I just thought it was an interesting read. It's much longer than this. I won't get into the rest of it. We talked already a long time about it. But yeah, man, Harper's Bazaar is where that article is. So you guys might want to check it out if you get a chance. It's pretty cool. Man, we talked a while. Let's see when we got time to play some games. Was there any fucking black people I wanted to do? Let's see. You know what? Yeah, fuck it. Do some fucking with black people. Might as well. I know you blacks love this segment. Where's my music? There we go. Just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. Time to play the game we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game that goes all around the globe and assigns point scores from 0 to 100, intervals of 25 for how much we feel fucked with as black people for each article. Today's contestants, everybody. All right. WJZ says anchorwoman Mary Bubala is out in wake of her question about race, gender, and of recent Baltimore mayors. WJZ anchorwoman Mary Bubala came under fire Thursday for a question she asked about the race, gender, and leadership of Baltimore's past three mayors is no longer with the station, according to an email sent to the Baltimore Sun. Mary Bubala is no longer with WJZ TV employee. The station apologized to its viewers for her remarks. The criticism of Bubala started last week in the wake of her anchor asking Loyola University Maryland, Loyola University Maryland professor Carsonia K. Wise Whitehead on an on-air question about the race and gender of the past three Baltimore mayors. We've had three female African-American mayors in a row. They were all passionate public servants. Two resigned, though. Is this a signal that a different kind of leadership is needed to move Baltimore City forward?
Yeah, 100. She need to lose that job. Yeah, I bet you they Facebook and Twitter, I bet you they got lit up with complaints. Okay, if that was the reason why you got black women that got voted in, maybe because that's what the city wants.
Them crackers.
How the fuck? How the fuck? You gonna wait till it's black women to be like, isn't it time to go back to white men? I mean, is this little experiment, this silly game that we're playing with black women pretending to be like mayor material, can we stop now, guys? I think we've had enough. Bubula apologized on Twitter on Thursday because Nikki Mayo, who works at the TV news and is immediate past president of Baltimore Association of Black Journalists, posted the video on Twitter and it blew up. The statement from Swain, meanwhile, silent, WJZ remained silent as the BABJ on Monday posted a statement on its website labeling her question racist and sexist.
Right.
Bubula emailed the following statement saying, in my 22 years of working in TV news in Baltimore, 15 of those years with WJZ, I've always treated people with the utmost respect and dignity. I loved my job because I love the people of Baltimore. Last week, I realized I made a mistake in the language I used on air. I immediately apologized for any hurt I unintentionally caused. I received immediate support from WJZ because they knew it was not in my heart to intentionally cause this kind of harm. I wanted to do an on-air apology, but was not allowed. I hope the people of Baltimore know that I would never do anything to hurt anyone. Unfortunately, I now stand in the path of the tornado. WJZ was forced to let me go. They always do this, right? Oh, the blacks and their vitriol forced the station's hand, and I guess I have to pay for my mistake. Baltimore City has been my home for 25 years, and I treasure it. And I treasured and am so grateful for the relationships I have made with the people of Baltimore during this time. I fully intend to fight to restore my reputation because I've invested my heart and soul in my work in my city. Thank you, Baltimore, for all. You know what, dog? This is worse than Martin Luther King Jr. Because that's not even a Freudian slip.
Mm-mm.
You really asked that question because you thought it was relevant. Like, being a black woman is obviously a problem with this mayoral position. Should we just stop having black women as mayors? The fuck kind of question is that?
The women that the city elected?
Like, how come we never ask that question about white people shit?
Come on!
Isn't it time that we just stop having white men as president of the United States after Trump?
Yeah, they keep fucking it up.
The last few white men that were president were pretty bad. Get the fuck out of here. 100.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they fired her, so okay, you know, 75, because they did fire her, but damn.
She still get 100 from me. She shouldn't have asked that question. You've been doing this for 15 years. Your whole thing is words and integrity. You knew 100.
Houston High School bans hair rollers, satin caps, and pajamas for parents. A nationally acclaimed high school principal is standing by a new dress code she created not for students, but for their parents. The code says attire that is totally unacceptable for the school setting will get parents kicked off campus. Carlotta Outley Brown, a black woman, is the principal of James Madison High School in Houston, Texas. She issued new rules earlier this month after one mother allegedly showed up at the school wearing a head wrap and a t-shirt dress. The parental dress code applies only to the high school, not the rest of the district. While some support it, others are in an uproar. Yeah, see, this is that thing that I don't like what schools do. These zero tolerance type of policy things are just always a bad idea.
Right.
You have one person that y'all don't like did this thing. You talk to her, she refused to comply. You gotta let it go, dog. You did your best. But I guarantee you it wasn't some every parent is showing up like this.
Mm-mm.
So you didn't need to pass these rules.
Mm-mm.
Two, what the fuck you gonna do if somebody show up to see their kid but they got a head wrap on? They can't see their kid? Is that what's about to happen? Because if you think you had problems before,
you really gonna have,
because you thought they were quote unquote acting ghetto, guess the fuck they about to act if they show up to school and you be like, sorry, but your pants are sagging a little too much, don't think you're gonna be able to see your daughter today. Okay, I'll be right back. The fuck? Oh my god, why put this in writing? Why?
That's the thing, you put it in writing and that becomes the problem. And I put it like this: I don't attend your school. I'm not a child. I do not attend your school. Fuck your dress code. I'm sorry, fuck a dress code. Me as a parent, I'm a parent. I've been to school. I shouldn't have a dress code. But at the same time, it's very frustrating. It's a catch 22. Because, like you said, instead of that one person just complying and being reasonable, they were unreasonable. So instead of the school being reasonable, the school became unreasonable. And that's how you got these laws.
I'm willing to bet money there aren't other parents just even would fucking apply.
Right.
Until you start adding other shit on your dress code. Because that's the other thing. Once you start putting shit in writing, people start going overboard. You can't just put, okay, no t-shirt dresses and no, like, having your hair in a with rollers in it. You can't do that. Now you gotta be like, hey, you know what else I don't like? Bonnets. Take that, put that on there. Oh, skull caps. Mm-hmm. Get that out of there. Mm-hmm. Durags, put that on there.
And see, that becomes a problem. I'm rushing just so I got my hair wrapped up. And so that's the thing. You're causing unnecessary conflict.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the parent will be able to go to and fro like normal. But all of a sudden, it's the morning time. I'm rushing. I might tie my hair up and I might comb it right before I go in. Now all of a sudden, I'm, or either I get a random call about something happened to my baby at school. I come in there and I got to deal with the people telling me that I can't get to my child. Then I'm gonna cut a fucking fool.
Right. And this ain't lean on me, man. Like, this type of, like, you know, TV show, movie, vice, like principaling and shit. Like, this shit might be something that, you know, people want to watch Morgan Freeman do. They don't really want to watch. They don't want to have to be subjected to this shit at their school.
No, and the thing is, the way from what I hear, this isn't a system-wide policy.
No, it's her school. I just read
right,
it.
Right. So, this isn't a system-wide policy. So, what is, no.
Right, it's this one school, and it's obviously mostly black. And I've read conflicting reports that, like, the mother's kid broke their arm. I don't know how true that is or not. I didn't see it in the articles. I saw it on social media, so I'm right. Not sure if that's true.
Correct.
But even if your kid don't got a broke arm, if you just like fucking have an emergency or you need to see your kid real quick and you ain't got time to change clothes, you say, hey, look, here's your school, here's your lunch money or some shit. Like, what the fuck? I can't give my kid their lunch money now? So it's just kind of ridiculous, and it definitely does feel racial.
Right.
Because it is one school with black people, and it's one parent that was a black woman that then became indicative of all the parents, and now none of the parents can violate this stupid ass dress code. And you already have a dress code for the kids, which I'm fine with. I'm not bothered by those.
Right.
When I was younger, I thought that was bad, but as I got older, I realized, like, that's not a bad thing to have a dress code for these kids. Especially considering some of the trauma I went through as a black kid with, like, our culture of joning motherfuckers that, got the wrong shoes and the wrong jeans and the wrong, like, that's not good. And I'm sure they still find a way to joke on people, but the shit was just kind of out of hand when I was a kid. So, if that's one burden we could take off these new kids, good. I just don't understand what they got to do with the parents.
Right, and then you're causing unnecessary confrontation and conflict that actually don't have to be there.
Right.
You know, so now a parent comes in and you're actually causing the front desk and the front office fucking extra work to do. So now instead of somebody just coming in, signing and keeping it pushing, now I got to look at you. Who gives a fuck what you got on?
Yeah, it's just, and that's the other thing. Like, I still don't lose sight of this. And I think everybody needs to put it in perspective. The vast majority of these parents aren't violating this shit anyway.
Right. That's the
point.
So
you made an issue out of nothing. Most, like, even the people that are like, if I want to see my kid, you're going to let me see my kid. Even you in the chat room saying that right now are probably not rolling up to school in a house coat, slippers, and your bonnet. Most of us are still like, let me get a little bit presentable before I go to this school. 99% of us. So why the fuck did you write this down? Because you think there's something pathological about blackness and black people, and this one black woman now has to represent all the quote-unquote bad blacks, and you want to show that you're tough and you're cracking down on the ghetto blacks and the bad blacks. I think that's how it feels to me. Maybe it's not that. Maybe some people feel totally different, but I guarantee this doesn't even apply. It's like, I want to look like I'm doing something, more so than it's actually having an effect on people.
Right.
Just tell that one, tell Keisha to stop dressing like that and just leave it at that. To pull Keisha into the fucking office and be like, dog, stop coming up here in your motherfucking t-shirt and panties and we good. That's what, it's just, what a, black in America, guys. 0 to 100, Karen.
Oh, this is a 100 for me. For the fact that you put it in writing is a problem.
Yeah. And she's a good principal. Like, that's the thing. She's been repeatedly honored for her work as an educator. In 2015, Ellen DeGeneres gave her a $100,000 check as part of a homeless outreach program she established at her previous school. I just think some of this more like, you know, like, we need to have a certain image type of shit goes along with a lot of these people in these platforms, and the power goes to people's head, and it's like, I can never be wrong, you know? And there's a lot of stuff like this, you know? Like, even Jeffrey Canada, who's done a lot for the kids, you know, in New York, with his, like, charter school program, there's a lot of respectability to it, too, you know? Like, that stuff has been in black revolutionary talk and black upliftment talk forever, you know, and it's not really going anywhere.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into some guest all right, so we can get up out of here. I'm not gonna do any more of these fucking with black people. It's all downhill from here.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah. And I haven't watched the Sandra Bland tape of her. She recorded when she got arrested or whatever. But just the fact that we're just now seeing it. I mean, that's 100, right? I mean, they had that shit for, what, 3-4 years now? 4 years? Yeah, yeah. We never saw it till today. Interesting. All right, let's play some Guess the Race.
Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time. Now that it's time for some Guess the Race. That's right, it's Guess the Race time.
That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all the podcast land. We read or play news articles from all over the world, and we ask our contestants to guess the race. And of course, Karen in the chat room play, and everyone playing is racist. All right, here's the first one. A man who robbed a Maine bank Tuesday used his unsuspecting father as his getaway driver.
Oh, unsuspect. Also, he wasn't in on it.
Nope. Joseph Donald Tilton was dropped off at Lewiston Bank by his father, Keith, in the afternoon. According to an affidavit, Keith Tilton believed his son needed to cash a check. Well, what's the ski mask for? However, police said Joseph Tilton actually robbed the bank. The bank teller told authorities that she thought the man was joking about the money because he spoke in a low tone to her, according to Sun Journal. Moments later, he allegedly demanded she give him the fucking money. He then jumped over the counter, took the money from the teller and the drawer. Keith dropped Joseph off at a different part of Lewiston before driving past the bank again. He was stopped by the police after his car matched the description of the vehicle used to leave the scene after the alleged robbery. He wasn't charged in the crime. Joseph was charged with felony robbery and is accused of stealing $620, according to the Sun Journal. Karen, guess the race of what is his name? Joseph Donald Tilton.
White, because they didn't charge the other person as accessory. You know they don't give a fuck if you knew or not. You going to jail too if you're black.
All right, let's check the chat room. I'm sorry, officer, I didn't know I couldn't do that. White took his word for it. Maine, unassuming father, white as the snow up north. White. Well, of course, white. Everybody's going white on this, and everyone's right. Like, I gotta be right back. I gotta make a quick withdrawal. And when you come to pick me up, Dad, don't slow down. Just unlock the doors and kind of slowly roll. Like, don't stop.
Right, and to an extent, you knew his daddy didn't know for the fact that they was like, you drove back past him? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's also like a movie or some shit. Cause like if the cops are after you, like, Dad, make a right here. Well, where are we going, son? Just make a right! Like, how's that? Oh my god, what a ridiculous thing. All right, let's do another one. Here's one. An Ormond House HOA. What does HOA mean? Housing Authority? I forget what it is. Homeowners Association? There we go.
There you go.
We don't own a house. Ormond.
Right. I'm like, what is that? HOA fees? What kind of fees are these?
What is that? Farmers of America? Like, right. Ormond HOA director is accused of firing a gun in a pool dispute.
Oh shit, shooting up at the pool.
An Ormond Beach Homeowners Association director got a gun and fired a shot when two teenagers refused to leave a community swimming pool. No one was hit, but Richard S. Marcel, 66, is now charged with 3 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon without intent to kill and discharging a gun in public. If convicted, he could face up to 5 years in prison and possibly more since a gun was involved. Marcel, who lists a Willow Run address in the Village subdivision, was released posting $35,000 bail. Julian Johnson, 18, who lives in the community, a younger friend, went to the pool around 9:15 p.m., to hang out. Johnson is allowed by the association rules to bring guests to the pool. Marcel drove up in his truck, walked out, and told him the pool was closed. But Johnson and his guests noticed that a sign listed the pool rules and said it was open until 10 p.m. Marcel, whose state records show is a director of the Village Homeowners Association, told them that the board had voted to change the rules at a recent meeting, but the new rules are not posted yet. Johnson and his friend decided to rely on the sign and ignore Marcel. Marcel intercepted them as they tried to re-enter the pool and displayed a small black revolver. Marcel then fired the gun into the dirt. Johnson and his friend left the area as Marcel followed them to their car. Johnson's friend asked Marcel, "Did you really just shoot a gun?" Marcel said, "Yes, I'm putting my own life at risk for the pool." Also, how is that really putting your own life at risk? Maybe I don't understand how that works. Anyway, Karen, guess the race.
White in 100.
You think it was some black kids at the pool and a white man?
Yes.
All right, let's take the chat room. 100, I mean white. Police in the pool, white. This man so white, he probably says nigra, white. The teams were black, the shooter was white, 100, white, black. Definitely some white people shit. White, he sounds alive and it's a HOA. White, he shot at some kids but didn't mean to kill them. Fuck out of here. He got a hood somewhere. White, redlining wouldn't save them. White, black, what Karen said, white. So two people went black, everybody else went white. Everyone who went white, you got it right. If you said black,
yeah, because you were going pretty hard for a fucking pool.
Yeah,
there was black children or young adults.
Yep. Guess they didn't really make a splash with the homeowner association there. They didn't want to cause any waves. That's terrible. And yeah, it feels like they were black. I didn't have a picture of the kids, but
my assumption is they was black, because he went real, followed them to the car and shit, black.
Right. Shooting at them.
Come on.
He wouldn't have shot no white kids.
Never.
All right, bonus round. Double the points and the race. Double the points and the race. That's right. Double the points, double the race, and the bonus round against the race. So far, Karen is 2 for 2. A very rare.
Believe it. 2 days in a row, too. Woo!
But you did not make it 3 for 3 yesterday.
No, I did not.
So, good luck today, Karen.
I hope so.
I think the entire chat room is probably rooting for you right now.
I root for me too.
A Florida man. Oh, Florida, let me love you till the morning comes. A Florida man was charged with attempted murder after shooting at deputies on an Instagram live stream.
oh shit.
And he claims that it was all part of a sex game between him and his wife.
What?
Why they play like that?
Why they play like that? At dog?
I tell you what'll make me come. Shooting at some cops. LaForest Gray, 23, has been behind bars since February after he allegedly opened fire at four deputies while filming himself for his Instagram fans. The officers had arrived at Gray's Orlando apartment over reports that he was beating his wife.
Oh!
But now Gray claims it was all part of their role-playing adventures. In the four-page letter to the judge of his case, Gray claims that the very fake and outrageous accusations have been made against him as he requests. The reason for this petition you are reading is in my hopes that you dismiss all charges against me at once, he writes. I feel like this motherfucker lying. I think he was beating his wife. He did shoot at them cops. And this is now his newest iteration of like, nah, it was just a game. Because even if it was a game, it's not like they would, if you like, listen, I beat my wife, okay, that was fake. That's part of the game we play. But the shooting the cops part, how's that part of the game? How, like, were the cops in on the game too? Is that why you want the charges dropped? In the handwritten letter, Gray claims that he and his wife, Rachel, have a low popular celebrity status and image. Rachel and I have a social media presence that we often role play. This type of role play even goes to the extent of Rachel using a stage name that I thought, which is Christina Rebecca Rossi. In our role play adventures, we have purchased specific items, added other members, and have acted the part in our video and online personalities. A lot of our role play adventures are for adult audiences because of the sexual nature we share. Gray reveals in the letter, which is obtained by WKMG, that some of his and Rachel's role play adventures can be found on Pornhub. He also claimed that he and Rachel are recognized and approached almost everywhere we go. People have gone so far as to ask for our autographs and pictures at places like malls, movie theaters, park, restaurant, grocery stores, and many more places, including the courthouse and the neighborhood, he continues. He has nearly 60 million followers between his two Instagram accounts.
Good God.
Which features some pictures of his wife, Rachel. She has more than 32,000 followers on her adult Twitter account. So he's on Twitter. On the night of February 13, 2019, Gray claims he and Rachel were role-playing in one of our many adventures. Absolutely no crimes are committed. I certainly didn't do anything to hurt Rachel, nor did I take her against her will for any reason whatsoever. Rachel is a princess in my world. Gray claims it was the four officers who attempted to murder him, claiming he assaulted Rachel. He also alleges that he was tackled and eaten alive by their dog. How you still alive? He doesn't know what that means. Police were called to Citra at Windermere Apartments after a man who was driving through the complex saw Rachel walking by and looking like she was in distress. She refused the man's help, but soon after ran back to his car after Gray left the couple's apartment and headed toward her. The man told police that Rachel got into his car and said, please help. Gray then opened the door, dragged his wife out by the hair, and began punching her.
Oh!
That's just part of the game, Karen. I guess the witness was in on it. Another witness saw Gray dragging Rachel down the street by her hair to their apartment and called 911. The deputy arrived at the couple's apartment, found them arguing in the garage. Gray ignored his commands and showed his hands, and three more deputies arrived. Gray began live streaming the incident, yelling at Rachel to tell the officers that the witnesses were lying. Wow. I tried, she tells him. Okay, tell them, he shoots back. I need you to calm down, she pleads to him. I need you to tell them, he says again. The deputies then pull Rachel out of the garage as Gray tells his followers, y'all finna see this shit live, bro. I take one for the team, yo. I swear to God, he continues. Come here, Rachel, come here. As an officer pulls Rachel away, Gray screams, get your hands off of her before multiple gunshots ring out. Body cam footage revealed Gray had been holding onto a silver pistol with his right hand and pointed at deputies, firing off the first round. Deputies fired back at Gray, but no one was injured or struck. Authorities said they had to use a K-9 to get Gray into custody. Investigators said Rachel was uncooperative and denied anything happened after her husband was arrested. She also claimed Gray didn't have a gun. Oh, God. Gray was charged with four counts of attempted murder on a law enforcement officer, domestic violence, and burglary. He's been held without bond. The judge denied his motion this week, stating that Gray cannot file motions on his own because he needs an attorney. He has an attorney. All right, Karen, guess the race of what was his first name? It was LaForest Gray.
I think LaForest is black and that woman is white.
Okay, let's see the chat room, see what they believe.
By that name, LaForest?
50 shades of what white nonsense is this?
I mean, did I say black?
You said he's black and yeah, okay. The woman's white. That's what you said. Gray Worm. They were white. Black that name. He lucky he ain't dead with his dumb shit on IG black. Oh, that's a black ass name. He's blackity black. Black folks don't need to create danger, so he's white. LaForest Whitaker, I shot her with my bad eye black. Black. Oh. That's a nigga name, Karen. I stand with you. Can I change my Quibecius white? Quebecos white? I don't know what that means. Cop went out of their way to make sure he survived, but that's a black ass name, so black. The correct answer is, and for the first time in a long time, Karen, you're going 3 for 3. He was Woo! Black. And as a bonus, she was white, Karen.
Woo-hoo! I got the bonus point.
They were definitely doing some black.com type of porn.
Right, that's what it sounded like, because I was like, if there's a white man named LaForest, I'm willing to go down with the ship on that one.
Yeah, she was one of them pogs too. You could tell what kind of porn they was into. I've never seen it, I don't think. And of course, many of you missed it and said white. If y'all want to see some this is him and his girl Dimes Big LA.
Oh yeah, that's that. She definitely in that pog genre.
Yeah, they definitely doing some type of interracial stuff. She might be Latina though, but either way. And that's pictures of his Instagram. This is the Instagram when they were when the cops were there, before they started shooting at the cops.
Wow.
Damn, you can tell people, we care about you, fam, bro, calm down, he really needs to chill. Of course, somebody, cartel.funds, bust back. Of course.
Bad influence. Don't listen to that follower.
This is what I be trying to tell y'all. These motherfucking followers
they
ain't your friends.
They don't care. They don't care if you die live on your stream.
Ruin your life real quick, nigga. It's fun. It'll be a thing I can tweet about for 2 seconds. Y'all won't believe what I just saw.
So then I can RIP.
Right. Oh, man, the cops be tripping, bruh. You dead, man. I'm going to miss you. Like, fuck out of here.
Right?
Playing with my life and shit. Anyway, let's do Sword Ratchetness and wrap this up. Santa Barbara County authorities arrested a man after reports he brandished a samurai sword during an argument outside of McDonald's in the city of Goleta.
Oh, what? Goleta where?
Goleta, the home out of here. I don't know, Karen. Fuck, I know that.
That sound like that's the middle of nowhere.
Goleta, nigga, get a gun. The sheriff's office says deputies responded around 8:20 p.m. Tuesday, the reports of a man armed with a samurai sword who was involved in a verbal dispute with another man. The suspects fled and an extensive search began, aided by police dogs, a helicopter, and the California Highway Patrol officers. So I guess it's California.
Okay.
Residents of Old Town Goleta were sent an emergency notification to shelter in place. An Amtrak train service was temporarily halted because the search was near the railroad tracks. A suspect was arrested at gunpoint around 10:15 p.m. in jail. The sword was determined to be a wooden replica.
Oh yeah, you know Goleta was one of them sundown towns. That sound like one of them places where they be having them gun offs and shit.
Goleta, it's your birthday. Mm-hmm. I don't know what a gun off is, but
I mean, you know, the old westerns where they staring at each other, a showdown.
Oh yeah, like
gun off, my bad.
a gun off. You know what? That's it, guys. Karen has reached maximum capacity today. We'll be back tomorrow recapping Game of Thrones, the shit y'all really want to hear.
Right. And, not being my bad jokes over here.
That's not even a joke. You just messed up. Gun off is not a thing. A gun off.
Y'all got guns at each other. Shit, somebody shoot.
That's what Detroit has when the mayoral election is tied. They don't have a runoff. They have a gun off. Like, first best man win.
You know who sponsors this? The NRA.
Mm-hmm. All right, y'all. We'll be back tomorrow. Nick Jew's going to be our guest when we recap Game of Thrones. So we'll talk to y'all then. Until next time, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.